Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. We're coming at you with another mini episode, and this one is all about tips for visiting our beautiful national parks this summer. And we have just done so many trips to our national parks, whether it's Acadia National Park on the East Coast or Olympic National Park on the West Coast. And I love these tips, Stephanie. Like, I really feel like if you follow these, you're going to have a better trip to our national
parks. They've been hard learned. I mean, we've never done everything right. But we learn our lessons along the way. That's what we're special at.
Hard learned and fine-tuned. Yeah. Like, we screwed it all up first and we figured it out over the last 10 years. So you're going to want to listen to this episode. Before we dive into the content, just a quick thank you to our sponsor, Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts. They are the exclusive sponsor of our May mini podcast episodes, and we really appreciate that a lot. So to find a Jellystone Park near you, you're going to want to go to jellystonepark.com. So Stephanie, summer's here. I mean, it's time for these big national park trips that so many of us have been dreaming about all winter long on those cold, snowy days.
It's iconic, right? Go to the national parks with your kids during the summer. But the thing is that we go to these national parks, and I'm telling you, no matter where we are in this country, we go there and we see people that just kind of are wandering around looking confused, right? Every time. It's overwhelming.
Dazed and confused.
Here's the thing. I feel like people show up at a national park expecting the same kind of experience you have at a theme park, where you are directed through the gates and you are given a map of all of the attractions to see, and you can sort of go through the park and see the different attractions. And when they show up, they're a little surprised that it's a little more wild and a little harder to manage than that.
I also think that's a great point. I also think that, like, people going to Disney World because they're spending so much money, they, like, most people, like, plan out their trip and think about it. But I think a lot of people just kind of, like, show up at a national park for Saturday.
And then they're like, what do we do?
And they're like, oh, it's massive. It's gigantic. And then the unfortunate thing is that a lot of the people end up going to the same three or four places, right? So let's dive right into our tips here. We go to the most popular places. I mean, we love going to the most popular places. They're usually popular for a reason, but we get there early. It is amazing how many people just do not get up and out of bed early. So, like, if we can get to a popular spot, I'd even say by 8 a.m., they're usually pretty empty because most people are just getting up and having breakfast then. The early bird does get the worm, apparently.
Right. And it's really true of national parks because of tour buses, especially. So what happens is the time at about between 8 and, you know, 8 and 9:30 at most national parks across the country, you are going to be able to access and park at most of the trailheads. You're going to be able to see most of the popular spots. Now, at 10:30 to 11, I promise you the crowds start rolling in. If you park at one of the most popular hikes at 8 o'clock in the morning at a national park, when you come down from that hike, you're going to see people fighting for parking, to, you know, looping and looping and looping. Now, I've heard people say, oh, well, we flip it. We go, we relax in the morning and go later in the afternoon. I have to say that I've been to a lot of national parks, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they're still hopping and crowded. So, like, I think that's a little more of a, I don't know, it's a little more of a risk to do it that way.
I just think most people don't get up early enough. And, like, we have seen this at Acadia National Park on the East Coast. We've seen this at Great Smoky Mountains National Park in the South. We've seen this at Olympic National Park, at Redwoods. Everywhere we go, this principle seems to be the same. We are able to get parking in very popular locations. And Stephanie's exactly right. When we walk back to the car, everyone's circling.
Yeah, it's jam-packed. So that's our number one tip. If you want, I think you're silly if you go to, say, Acadia and you don't go to Thunder Hole, right? Some people are like, oh, the popular places are so overrated. I love to see the most famous place in a national park. So I think you're silly if you go and you just avoid all the popular places. But you're also silly if you go at noon because you're going to be irritable and cranky in the crowds. I think crowds make people irritable.
I've actually never been to an overrated popular place in a national park. Like, I've never gone somewhere like, oh, this is like, oh, this is so disappointing. No. All right. So tip number two, we then head to the off the beaten track destinations and attractions in the afternoon. Now, what we've discovered is even smaller national parks like Acadia You can get lost in Acadia. You can be on hiking trails in the middle of the summer in Acadia and maybe see like one other family or two other families. You just have to go beyond those three or four places that everybody else is hyper-focused on. And every single national park has them. That I can guarantee that. Unless it's something like Mount Rushmore or whatever, where there's just not that many different things to do. But our larger actual national parks always have off the beaten track destinations.
Well, I think Mount Rushmore would be a good example of what you do is, you know, at Mount Rushmore, you would get there early and maybe see, and we'll talk maybe a little bit about more of what you would do that way. But then you would go into the national forest that's surrounding Mount Rushmore in the afternoon. And I guarantee you, you'll see two people on the trail. Or, of course, another thing is to just go back to the great campground you're staying at and rejuvenate and refresh and have time at the pool, which if you're traveling with younger kids, you know, just FYI, they can get national parked out, right? Like if you do hike after hike after hike after hike, your kids are going to get like enough already. So we oftentimes when we're doing a national park, we do really park specific activities in the morning and then give the kids time to ride their bikes and swim in the pool in the afternoon. And that works well for our family.
Now, tip number three kind of ties into tip number two. It's like, how do you find off the beaten track destinations and attractions in a national park? Well, tip number three is you got to get the right guidebooks. And this is very important. I want everyone to really listen to this. If you just get your Lonely Planet, Frommer's, Moon, Fodor's, which are these comprehensive guidebooks for a huge region, almost all of those guidebooks are going to recommend the same three hikes, the same three kayaking spots, the same three spots for iconic photography. So what we recommend is getting more specific guidebooks, that like a book that's just all hikes in Shenandoah National Park that's going to have 40 hikes, right? And it's going to give you all these amazing hikes that are not the commonly used ones in the major guidebooks. If you're going to do kayaking, most national parks will have a book like Kayaking in Olympic National Park. They're a little harder to find. Sometimes you got to get them in the gift shop in that national park. But those types of guidebooks are treasures because they are going to lead you to places where very few other people are going.
Yeah, and I think that your photography books have been even good for us finding fun places in the park, even if we're not necessarily, like the rest of us don't care about the pictures, right? Like you found amazing places that are off the beaten track, and then we all kind of go along with you and you try to get your picture and we like scramble on rocks.
I never thought of it that way, Stephanie, but the most national parks, the major ones, you can get a book like Photography in Yellowstone National Park. What a great book to just take you to some beautiful places. And photographers don't want other people around because that messes up your photos, right? So you could almost use those to just find the prettiest places. Love that.
Yeah. All right. So number four, and you know, this is honestly something you're going to hear from us at RVFTA over and over and over again. You know, talk to people. So number four is consult park rangers and local experts about your plan. I've seen in what we do this sort of idea in people, like people tend to want to be know-it-alls when they're going and traveling to a place. I think we have access to so much information online and we can do so much pre-planning and get so much information that when we show up at a spot, we can feel like, hey, I've got this. I don't need anybody else weighing into my plan. And I think that one of the things that we're really good at as travelers and one of the things that makes our vacations so great is that we're always willing to adjust our plan based on that local expertise. I think we've gotten a lot of magic that
way. Just a shout out to podcast listeners, to people listening right now. I think podcast listeners are not know-it-alls, right? That most of the people like listening to a podcast like this, you know that other people can really offer a lot.
Yeah.
To me, doing a national park trip and not talking to the park rangers is a fail. It's just an epic fail. I would be depressed if I didn't get that conversation in where the park ranger is going to guide me right to the perfect place for our family.
So we show up at a national park and we have a general idea based on all of our research about what we're going to do. And armed with that research, we go and we first talk to a ranger and we go up to the counter and we say, hey, we have three kids, these ages, these are what our interests are. Here's what we were thinking of. Do you think this is a good plan or would you recommend something else? And those conversations have helped us have some of the best experiences ever. For instance, I'll never forget the day we had our plan totally upended in the Smokies at one visitor center, the Iconolufti.
Iconolufti. Hopefully we're saying that right.
Visitor center.
Near Cherokee on the North Carolina side.
Yeah.
I never would have found the Kephart Prong Trail. Mm-hmm. None of my generic guidebooks had that. We were going to go on some other hike, and the ranger was like, well, your family, you look kind of adventurous. You guys seem like you're fit and ready for a good hike. This one's awesome. You love the Kephart Prong Trail. And like to imagine my life without doing that hike, it's like something would be missing from my life.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff you get from the rangers. And they're also able to tell you things maybe about washouts on trails or just all of that other stuff that they know because they go out there in the park every morning. They get the updates. Another thing that they're going to tell you is wildlife stuff. When we were out in Olympic, we talked to the ranger before we did another one of our favorite hikes of all time, Hurricane Ridge. Right. And the ranger told us there's been a bear that's been hanging around the picnic area. So watch out for that. And when you're going along the trail, make a lot of noise near the mountain goats. Like they gave us very specific wildlife information so we could be safe. So there are many reasons to have that conversation.
And no guidebook is going to give you the current information right on the bear around the picnic tables.
And they do. They really always lay that out for you. Now, number five. This is being optimistic about national parks information online, but when you can get it, make sure you look at the national park program schedule online before you arrive. Something that I've realized so much is that when we show up without any idea of the programming, sometimes we don't time our visits right. Like we were going to be in the park on Tuesday, and then I look and there was an amazing program like in the tide pools or something on Wednesday. And we're like, oh, if we had known that ahead of time, we would have come on Wednesday. Now, I don't think the national parks are great about this, but some of them are. So if you can access that information online ahead of time, it can be really helpful. You just don't want to miss those special events.
And so, you know, the greatest tip of all time is to go to the ranger station on the first morning of your trip and not only talk to a ranger, but also look for those whiteboards that have the ranger talk scheduled in and have the tide pool walk scheduled in. I find that most of the time you're going to get that information directly at the ranger station.
Yeah, but some of the times they do those newspaper magazine kind of things, and they print them for the season, and it'll have in there that like every Tuesday there's this, every Thursday there's that. Mount Rushmore you brought up before, and this is a particularly difficult case of that. The Mount Rushmore activity schedule and walk schedule is one of the most important ways for you to enjoy Mount Rushmore, right? If you just go and look at the men up in the mountain, you're going to be like, this is overrated. But if you do all those ranger talks and walks, the place is going to come alive. Well, that's an example of how that's not online. So here's my tip for someplace like that. At Mount Rushmore, the night before, when we were there for the evening ceremony, we asked the rangers about the next day's schedule. We laid out our whole day based on the walks and the talks that we wanted to go to. And then we had our game plan. You have to be strategic if you want to not walk away from a national park feeling like, I don't get it.
And it's a little tricky too, because for those people who do like to hyper plan their trips to a national park, you're just some things you're going to find out when you get there.
Yeah.
And that so you need to leave a little flex room for that to happen. And I think that's very important.
All right. Number six, I kind of mentioned the theme park thing before, because I think it's a big thing for Americans to shift out of that customer service based theme park mentality and shift into a national park mentality. But you have to realize that national parks are not theme parks. You have to, first of all, put safety ahead of a lot of other things, because this is a wild environment when you walk away from those visitor centers, and you have to show respect for wildlife and for the environment in these places that we want to preserve for our kids and our grandkids.
And almost, I think every national park does have specific safety recommendations and guidelines for that park, because the things that you need to worry about in Badlands National Park in South Dakota are going to be different than the things you need to worry about in Olympic National Park in Washington State. So you really do need to do a little research. What's the local wildlife? And, you know, to be very blunt here, people make bad decisions in national parks and they get really hurt and people die in national parks all the time. And a lot of times they would have been easily avoidable things, sadly.
Yeah. Well, first of all, not taking the selfies on, you know, ledges.
Also, people like swimming in these hot water pools in Yellowstone just because they're not educated and they don't know that the water can be ridiculously burning hot. So just getting those basic tips ahead of time is really essential for your family's safety and enjoyment.
It is. And also, you know, we all saw that when the national parks were shut down for a little while, like those, everybody saw those trash pictures, you know, and we just need to understand that the national parks belong to us. And everybody that walks into that national park should feel the responsibility of maintaining that environment. And even if there are garbage cans, if the garbage can is full, then carry it out with you in your truck, you know, and in your car and bring it back to the campground and throw it out there. There's a lot of ways that we can feel that personal responsibility to care for these wild environments instead of just feeling like we're kind of like there's people, the cleanup crew, you know, that's coming behind us like it would be at Dollywood, because it's not that way at the national parks.
Stephanie and I have both said for years that they undercharge to get into national parks. Like, it's just not expensive to get into a national park. And now they have all these maintenance backlogs and they're understaffed, and taking that bit of personal responsibility on it, we think is very, very important. So our last tip is that you're going to want to check out the Every Kid in a Park program. So when kids are in fourth grade, they can get a pass for free entrance into national parks for the year. Mm-hmm. And bonus, the family gets in too.
Yeah, no, this isn't going to cover some of those funny national parks that have like parking fees instead of entrance fees, like Mount Rushmore, places like that, or cave tours, right? Or things like that. This isn't going to cover everything, but it's going to cover the majority of your entrance fees across the country for the entire fourth grade year. And as a teacher, I think that I took for granted how many people know about this program. Some schools are trying to do a really good job of making sure their fourth graders know about it, but I've also talked to people that had no idea and that missed that fourth grade year. Now, this is the part that I don't like about this. You have to go to everykidinapark.gov to get the pass and print it out to take to the national park. And the reason why I don't like that is because, like, we showed up at the Chincoteague National Seashore. The boys had just started their fourth grade year. I had forgotten to print out the pass.
And how many people do, right? And, like, you think of it when you're there.
And I was like, oh my gosh, it's our first national park in their fourth grade year. And I walked up to the counter. I was like, can I scan it on my phone? You know, like, this is 2019, people. Like, I was like, oh, can I do it here? And they're like, no, you have to have printed it out. That annoyed me. I wish that, you know, the system had in place a little bit bigger wiggle room for people who weren't aware of the program and wanted to take
it. You just should be able to sign up for it right there. I mean, that's simple.
Right. So, but I want all of our listeners to know to print it out ahead of time.
But God forbid we criticize anything about our national parks because we love them so much. So those are our seven tips. But this summer, you might also not want to just do national park trips. You might also want to take a trip to a Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resort. And they are the exclusive sponsor of our May podcast mini episodes. And there are some Yogi Bears that are right outside of the national parks.
Mammoth Cave,
Great Smoky Mountain. So you could stay at a Jellystone, have all those luxurious amenities, and then head into the park for some rugged hiking all day.
And, you know, that's our favorite tip just for family travel right there, for family camping. You know, for us, there's no one way to camp. We love mixing it up to keep our kids really having a great time when we're camping. So, yeah, they're outdoors hiking all day, kayaking. And then we come back to the campground.
To say, like, the Jellystone Luray, which has a beautiful view of the Shenandoah National Park.
Yeah, but then you come back and you do the hay ride with Yogi and you get to do a sing-along. Or reading
time. It's a hey, hey ride.
Hey, ride. And then you get to go to the story time with Cindy Bear. And our family has experienced so many of those wonderful times at a Jellystone Park, like the ones that you mentioned outside of national parks. And it's just perfect because our kids are playing laser tag. They're going to the arcade, right? I mean, look, it's all fun. It's fun out there in the park, and it's also an amazing time at your local
Jellystone Park.
And imagine
if you get rained out in the national park, there's going to be a lot of things for the kids
to do. Oh, you're going to have movie time at a Jellystone. You're going to have lots lots of arts and crafts inside the rec hall at a Jellystone, you're going to have a good time no matter what, right? So every park offers its unique blend of family fun, but you have to remember it's not just a campground, it's a Jellystone. And now's the time to book your summer and even your fall, especially Halloween weekend.
Time to start thinking about 2020, people.
Yeah. So go to jellystonepark.com to make a reservation at a Jellystone park near you.
And hopefully we'll see all of you at the campground.
See you at the campground.